Already, I got mine. Go ahead and mark that ballot, get it in the mail, cast your vote, make sure that your voice is heard in this election. Want to thank Danielle Parks, our engineer, my co-host Jamie Partridge, who actually wrote a bunch of the questions that I myself asked, and all the listeners who've been with us tonight. If you stay tuned, you're going to catch Prison Pipeline. If you tune in next week, you'll hear Labor Radio once again. Thank you all for joining us. Please vote.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Let Us Grow on Friday, November 4th at Mercy Corps in Portland. Let It Grow celebrates the work of bringing education and the experience of gardening to incarcerated youth and adults in Oregon's correctional facilities. This event features the premiere of the documentary Can You Dig This? And a panel discussion after the film. Again, that's Let Us Grow, a benefit for growing gardens, taking place Friday, November 4th at Mercy Corps, 45 Southwest Ankeny Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Thirsty City on Wednesday, October 26th, starting at 8:30 p.m. at The Know in Portland. Thirsty City is a monthly hip-hop beat hangout, bringing you fresh sounds from local and touring hits. Live music until 11 p.m., DJ sets 11 p.m. to close. This month features 2 North, Durazo, Lisa Vasquez, and more, and is a benefit for KBOO. Again, that's Thirsty City, Wednesday, October 26th, 8:30 p.m. at The Know, 2026 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad.
Coming to you from the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. Along with a couple of other members of the Prison Pipeline Collective, I recently attended the Women in Prison Conference that was organized by the Oregon Justice Resource Center and held at the Lewis and Clark College School of Law in mid-October. It was a powerful, moving, and very informative event. There was a strong focus this year on rehabilitation and reentry. As a society, we've neglected those aspects of the criminal justice system for a very long time. There's a lot of research that shows what works. The feds have funded a great number of pilot programs around the country that have provided statistical and other data proving the effectiveness of rehabilitation. Yet lawmakers are still resistant. Sure, there are programs out there, but there are also roadblocks, other obstacles, and very little funding and other support. I spoke about this with Bobin Singh, the executive director of the Oregon Justice Resource Center. I'd say it feels like sometimes the system is set up to make people fail. And the kinds of obstacles, and we hear complaints about two-thirds of people reoffending. With as much effort as the system puts into making people fail, it almost feels like getting one-third of people to not recidivate is against all odds. That's tremendous. If we would stop putting so many hurdles in place.
You know, I think you're right. The system itself right now is designed to punish, overly incarcerate. And really, as we learned during the conference, the sentencing structures that exist here in Oregon between our mandatory minimum Measure 11, the mandatory like sentences like under Measure 57 for property and drug crimes, they're really they really have a lot of ambiguity and broadness to them and cast a very wide net. I think the intent, at least as the public understood what these laws were supposed to be, were really to get people who are the worst of the worst, habitual criminal, you know, people who habitually commit criminal activity, and to really, you know, understand that there has to be some punishment mechanism in our society. I don't think the public ever really understood fully that this is how these laws and this is how our criminal justice system would be used and these laws would be deployed. So what you end up happening is a system that over-criminalizes and criminalizes people more quickly than it does anything else. And then once you're caught in the system's really designed not to allow you to succeed. It's actually with tremendous effort and resources that's required to ensure that people don't reoffend, that people are stable, because in a sense, we're criminalizing poverty, we're criminalizing those that are on the margin. And then when they get out, we prevent them from being able to access the things that they need in order to be stable, which is not things that the criminal justice system is supposed to provide, like mental health support, substance abuse or addiction support, counseling, family support, family reunification, connection type of things. So the criminal justice system, as it's designed and sort of the sentencing options that exist here, it's very much being used with intention to basically brutalize segments of our community. And it's not a system in the sense that it's a functioning system or one that's somehow a uniform system or a cohesive system. It's a bunch of specific actors that are working in silos that are churning people out in and out of our justice system.
I've been speaking again with Bobin Singh, Executive Director of the Oregon Justice Resource Center. Bobin, thank you so very much.
You are listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Aileen Farkash is with the Mercy Corps Northwest Reentry Transition Center. She spoke at the conference on the topic of probation and post-prison supervision. I got the chance to speak with her and one of her clients, Crystal Magana, that weekend.
My name's Aileen Farkash. I work for Mercy Corps Northwest's Reentry Transition Center. I am a navigator, and I work with folks who are getting out of prison.
Yeah, talk to me about your job.
Well, I can introduce you to one of my clients, Crystal Magana.
Hi, my name is Crystal Magana, and I'm a client of Mercy Corps Northwest, and Aileen is my navigator. And I was just released from prison 107 days ago after serving 16 and a half years inside the walls. I was 19 when I was incarcerated, and I'm 35 years old today. Just my own self-motivation and finding folks, and I'm not just referring to prison staff. I'm talking about my family. I'm talking about programs like Mercy Corps and their life. It's a life course inside the prison walls that I was able to take that taught me about starting my own business and becoming responsible and connecting the two together to have a healthy life. And programs like the Family Preservation Project and them connecting me with my daughter and, you know, like Fire Crew, those kinds of programs, those kinds of support systems is what helped me be able to enroll prior to release with the Oregon Tradeswomen Program. I released June 27th. The first week of July, I started my Oregon Tradeswomen pre-apprenticeship program. Within 8 weeks, I was a graduate. I also was able to receive an awesome letter of recommendation for being selected as one of the 10 student helpers, which basically we set up and tear down every job site. We're responsible for tools, getting the crew started, and getting the crew ready to go home for the day. I also was able to take what's called a HAZWOPR class. This is $600 certification that Oregon Tradeswomen offered me. I was able to do that because Coffee Creek allowed for a gentleman, Todd Cooper, to come in and teach us flagging classes. My family was able to send me the $80 to pay for that class. I got out, and D&H Flagging was the only flagging company that would hire me, and they hired me with a smile. And because of my work ethic and my perseverance, they put me on prevailing wage jobs. They work around my class schedules, my work schedules. Upon completing the Oregon Tradeswomen, I did my entry application for Local 29 iron workers, and as of yesterday, I completed Hell Week, and I'm officially an apprentice for Local 29 on day 107 of release. Within that, I also have had the freedom to be able to talk to my daughter whenever I want, to be able to go and see her, to not have somebody tell me this is what you can and can't say, to tell me that's too much of a hug, that's too much of holding her hand. I have that freedom now. And Coffee Creek, as much as there's awesome programs there, unfortunately, the reality is the truth about the staffing there is not spoken about honestly. And those staff are there to break you down. 16 and a half years, I hit my head against every brick wall. And I'm talking staff members that told me my leadership skills were not the right kind. My voice, it was too big. I need to shut up. I need to be quiet. I need to not fight. I need to let it go. I need to just stop. Basically, quit myself and quit life and quit fighting for my future. And because I said, hell no, I am where I am today. I am able to come back in here and navigate and speak up for the other women and my sisters, because those three ladies that came here today to Lewis and Clark College, those are my sisters. When they're looking around and trying to find somebody to anchor onto for strength, they're not looking at the COs. They're looking at a face that was inside the walls with them, that walked those hard lines with them. Prison is not easy. And yes, there's awesome programs, but it's the staff that breaks you down. Just recently, we've had two staff members become arrested and fighting or being charged this week, being charged with sexual misconduct, sexual rape, sexual just things that should not be happening. And while I was inside those walls, I was never a victim of any of that, but I was definitely looked at and groomed to see if there was any of those weaknesses within myself to be able to be pulled into that. Unfortunately, these women that are inside the prison walls aren't offered classes about self-esteem, self-worth, the ability to set a boundary, to get up and walk away. And then when they do speak up and say something, they're told, just like me, shut up and sit down. That didn't happen. Nope, just be quiet about it. Your time will be easier if you be quiet about it. And the more that you speak up, the more that you try to fight for yourself, the more that the majority of the Coffee Creek correctional staff tries to shut you down. And I'm a firm believer in change. And change has to start all the way at the top with the big ones, the ones that are ultimately having the hands of control, because they're the ones that direct the ones underneath them and the ones underneath those ones and how things are affected. And I'm also involved with, I'm getting ready to go into Oak Creek to go speak to those young girls that are going to have the opportunity from youth correction to go into youth build to be able to learn a skill set and a trade set. And those kids right there, those are the beginnings of the adults and this whole system that just is this continuous cycle that doesn't stop. But those kids, most of those girls now, in the way that the sentencing laws are, they're going from juvenile detention straight up here to prison. And so those are the victims. These girls that are being assaulted in there, that are being verbally, mentally, sexually abused, because it's not just sexual abuse, it's a huge mental game with inside those walls. Those are the girls that just came from Oak Creek. Those are the girls at 10 and 11 years old have been running the streets and running away and living on their own and forced into prostitution and all of these horrible things. And nobody stops and says, hey, I love you. I care about you. And I'm not going away until you get to where you're going. And even then, I'm not going away. I'm sticking by your side, because had someone done that for me, I wouldn't have went through what I went through. But today I have that support system. So I'm using everything that I do. I don't just see, it's not just about me, it's about my daughter. It's about those girls that came in today and spoke. It's about the other women that are still at Coffee Creek that I don't even know. It's about all those young girls that are sitting down there at JDH. It's about the moms that are out there, teen moms that are struggling and don't know what they're going to do next for food and are on the verge of making that criminal decision that could change the rest of their life and the lives of that child. That's what I'm about, change, and doing it with a big mouth and a positive way.
I don't know what to say except congratulations. 107 days and you've already got a gig, and this is, I mean, getting a job ain't that easy right now, and that is, I mean, it's just impressive in itself. But you know, just, yeah, good job, right on.
Thank you.
Just good job. Okay.
I wish I could tell you that all of my clients that who were released from Coffee Creek and the men's prisons throughout the state of Oregon have the same story. Unfortunately, of the 1,000 people that come through our doors at Reentry Transition Center, there are very few who did get to take opportunities of these programs that these three privileged inmates who we just heard from inside spoke of. So DOC chose the women who we spoke to today. And as I listened to the three women tell their stories about how wonderful the staff are and how supportive the higher staff are, I remembered my own incarceration in 2007 and 2008, where I was broken down. I was 28 days to the gate when they told me I hadn't changed enough and that I was too smart for my own good, and I was returned to prison to serve another year because the staff told me that I was too smart. So I guess they were right, because when I got out of prison in 2008, I started off by working at Wendy's, the only job I could get. I didn't get the opportunity to take programs. I was what they called short time, so I wasn't offered a lot of programs. Worked at Wendy's for a year during the day. At night, I worked at a detox facility cleaning up puke. And growing tired of that after a year, I decided to go back to school, and I started at the community college. I did 2 years there. Then I was invited to the Honors College at Portland State University. I graduated as a McNair Scholar with 2 degrees and a 3.98 GPA. I just started a master's program. I'm working on a Master of Social Work. I'm in week 3. And again, it really... And I did this at a time where reentry was not a hot topic like it is today. I remember, I'm 48 years old. I remember my mother saying to me, "Why are you studying reentry? You're not going to make any money doing this." And the obvious answer was, "I'm not doing this for the money, number one. Number two, it's a hot topic on the news. Let's talk about what we could do in the community. How can we support people who are releasing from prison? The statistics we hear all the time, 1 in 4 people have some interaction with the criminal justice system. Justice, I like to use the air quotes around justice. So let's say justice involved. And the formerly incarcerated community are worth working with, working for, working alongside. Places like Dave's Killer Bread, who will hire people without questions. They don't ask, "What were you in for?" They know that they don't ask.
Even after the buyout, they persist.
Even after the buyout, they have the Dave's Killer Bread Foundation, and they are an employer who should be modeled. So the Dave's Killer Bread Foundation goes out into the community and educates other employers how they can become... We don't call people second chance employers anymore. We don't have lists of felon friendly apartments, lists of felon friendly jobs. We teach people to use your time in prison, put it on your resume, tell them what you learned in there and how you're committed to doing better today. At the Reentry Transition Center, we have classes, life skill classes, rent well classes. We are a partner in the community where we have lots of volunteers come in and help people with resumes, cover letters. I personally see, so I'm one of 3 navigators, and I personally see about 400 to 500 people a year. And I help them with everything from creating a resume and writing a cover letter, practice interviewing, clothing. We have a beautiful clothing room all day, every day. I am so busy, I don't have time to get up during my day. I'm so busy with the folks coming out of prison and coming to Mercy Corps for help with transition. You know, I wish I had a million crystals coming through. The truth is, though, people come in, they have had trauma in their life. I think I could confidently say every person who comes through past my desk has had some significant trauma, which is what ultimately brought them to prison. They're not just thieves and drug addicts, and yes, they might be those things, but that's not all they are.
Well, certainly the case with, the DOC folks were right there to make sure that they stuck to the script, but that was the recurring theme for all of their things started off at a very early age with people who should have been taking care of them and instead exploited and abused, and it's the miracle is that they can have some kind of a positive attitude after all that occurred in there. I'm guessing that after they come out, possibly guessing after, so you think after they after they're released and after they're out of the control of the DOC that possibly those three will have a slightly different story about their time inside?
It's a good question. Let's talk about this. The number one factor. Where are they paroling to? What house, home, community are they paroling to? Crystal was lucky, and I say that with the air quotes too, because she was placed in one of the buildings downtown Portland in the worst drug, alcohol, crime area in Portland, downtown Portland. Let me tell you a very quick story. Crystal's very athletic. She's in good shape. She worked out a lot in prison. She came out here. She tells me, I'm a runner. I need to run. She was getting up pre-dawn to go running downtown alone. My coworkers and I looked after Crystal walked out of our office. We said, she's not safe running alone in that area at 4 o'clock in the morning. We were genuinely concerned about her. So let me back up to your question. The housing crisis in Portland is tripled when you are formerly incarcerated and you're releasing to either one of the buildings downtown, or do you know POs are using shelters? The Clark Center, TPI's Clark Center, is a very common place where somebody is released to. They get this transitional housing. They get it for 6 months. In the 6 months, they better learn how to live quick. They better learn how to manage money, how to rent an apartment, how to hold down a job, how to survive in the jungle where drugs and alcohol are everywhere and that's all they know. Like I said, I wish I had a million crystals because Crystal is able to hold her head up and look beyond that, but most of the people who come past my desk are not. And it's very common that they've never rented an apartment, especially the women. The women, most commonly, they've had a man somewhere along the way who did everything for them, or to them, if you will.
Let's go back to Crystal for a moment. Crystal, how'd you do it? How do you do it?
Number one, I have a faith system in God, and if I didn't look to Him every single day, my strength would be gone. But number two, I just looked at everything that I've been through, and I said, this is not going to be my life. This is not going to be my life. I'm done. I have a daughter. I think about her every day with every move that I make, and I think about if she was in my shoes right now, what would I be telling her, or what would I be hoping somebody would be helping her with? And I cannot be an example. I cannot try to encourage or help navigate my daughter's decisions if I'm not doing it myself. And then beyond that, I look to my father. You know, my mom was my abuser in my life. My dad was an amazing man, but he's not from the United States. He's from Mexico. So I'm a firstborn generation into the United States. And my father, I have so much respect and just pride and just really respect for my dad. He is a hard worker. He's always said, you know, the only good money is the money that you work hard for. Keep your words honest. Stay true to them. Be good to people, even if people aren't good to you. And good things will happen, but you got to stay to those things. And my father, because of those things and that encouragement and just keeping myself reminded of that has gotten me to this point. And I talk to my dad every weekend. For 16 and a half years, my father made it from Woodland, Washington to Wilsonville, Oregon, stood out there in that rain, stood out there in that cold, stood out there in that 100 and some degree heat, waiting to come in to see me just for a couple hours every single weekend that I was incarcerated. That's love. That is encouragement. That is strength. And so because of those things, it keeps me moving. And when I have a hard time, you know, one of the gals had spoke about Victim Offender Education Group. And one of the things that they teach you within that program is looking at when you're getting ready to relapse, a relapse prevention plan. So who are you going to call? So you got that small circle. They're not available. Then who? They're not available. Then who? Then who? Then who? To where you don't run out of resources of who to call. Excuse me, there's been days where I have literally driven from downtown Portland all the way out to 79th and 79th and Foster out to my navigator because she was the only one in her office that day at that time and sat with Cindy at Southeast Worksource Center and bawled because I felt like I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm not getting any calls back. I've done this and this and this for work. And she sat with me and encouraged me to make one more call. And that was the call that got me the job for flagging. So it's folks like that. It's me continuing to reach out. But then for me, like, I don't have drug and alcohol addiction, but I came from being in abusive relationships and being traumatized. And so for me, turning around and you know, using the voice that I've gained back to help other people, that's my recovery. That's how I stay clean and sober. That's it right there. And so that's why I come to things like this. This is why I'm sitting here speaking with you, because if there's something that I can say today that someone else hears and is moved, not just moved to think about it, but moved to do something about it, then that's what it was worth, is that right there. Saving one life at a time, helping one child at a time. If after somebody hears these stories and understands what these kids go through at such a young age, and then they suddenly see something happening on the street, and instead of saying, ooh, that doesn't look right, and keep walking, if they stop, say, hey, what's going on here, and actually stop, actually intervene, then it's worth it. Then it's worth it.
I wish that everybody had the same experience as Crystal. And like I said, Crystal is extremely self-motivated. Crystal's got that fire in her that, you know, not everybody has. So I had an incident just yesterday where a young lady, an African-American, who did a lot of the same things Crystal did inside, but doesn't have a relationship with her parents, doesn't have the support community, didn't learn how to build all of those. You know, Crystal talked about if these person isn't available, then we go to the next level. She doesn't have any of that. And she is in the Women in Trades program. She's been working for 3 weeks without steel toe boots in construction, risking losing her feet because she doesn't have the boots. So she went to a partner agency asking, telling them, I'm working already. I've been out 3 weeks. I've been working 3 weeks. I need boots. And they told her, sorry, you don't qualify. There are reasons why. I could talk about the reasons why, but the bottom line is, I love the success stories. I even love my own story of success. But what I know is that unless you're really, really motivated to succeed in spite of all the odds, it's so difficult when you come from a disadvantaged neighborhood, a disadvantaged family, when you're a person of color, when you're a person of low education, when you're a person who has been in a criminal lifestyle for generations, when your mother's been to prison, when her mother's been to jail, when you don't have it internally and you don't know where to get it externally, people have very, very different stories. So as proud as I am of Crystal, and believe me, I am very proud of her, my heart breaks for the hundreds and hundreds of women releasing to Multnomah County, Washington County, Clackamas County, Clark County, who don't know how to inspire themselves inside. They don't have people telling them they love them. I make it a point to tell the women who come sit at my desk that I love you. Because they don't hear it every day. They don't hear it every week, month, year. They don't know where to start. And it would be great if it could start inside, but you know where it would be better? Let's put some funding into education. I just have a radical idea here. Instead of building more beds at the women's prison, let's use that money to go into the schools. Go into the schools of the lowest income, of the people of color, of the oppressed communities. Teach them how to help themselves. Teach them how to manage money. Teach them what it means to have a job and get up every day and go to work. Teach them the importance of education. Instead of building more prison beds, can we work with kids to teach them how to avoid this trap? You know, drug addiction comes from unaddressed trauma, period. I learned this in my own life. I learned it sitting in prison. I hear it over and over again as I listen to the stories of these women. Drug addiction comes from unaddressed trauma, that we can really address that trauma so much more effectively beforehand than we can after the fact.
That was Aileen Farkash with the Mercy Corps Northwest Reentry Transition Center and one of her clients, Crystal Magana. I spoke with them at the Women in Prison Conference at Lewis and Clark College School of Law in mid-October. That event was organized by the Oregon Justice Resource Center. You can find them on the web at ojrc.org. We'll have more from that conference over the coming weeks. And for now, that's it. You have been listening to Prison Pipeline. Find this and previous installments of the show on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Prison Pipeline also has a Facebook page. Please give it a like. My thanks to our guests and to the Oregon Justice Resource Center. I also want to thank our engineers. And, of course, thank you, dear listener, for joining us. I'm Doug McVeigh. So long. Justice souls intentions.
understood. I try so hard, so please don't let me be.
Is a proud media co-sponsor of Mama C, Global Panther, at an Other Words bookstore, October 29th, that's Saturday, October 29th, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. This event is all ages and open to the public. Who is Mama C? Mama C is a singer, songwriter, poet, traditional African instrumentalist, a revolutionary, former Black Panther, mother, healer, and educator. Come hear her incredible story of political exile and how she tours the world. Now, supporting revolutionary movements for human rights and social justice, inspiring and invigorating many people. Again, that's Mama C, Global Panther, Saturday, October 29th at Another Words Bookstore, 14 Northeast Killingsworth, 6 p.m., all ages.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Thirsty City on Wednesday, October 26th, starting at 8:30 p.m. at The Know in Portland. Thirsty City is a monthly hip-hop beat hangout, bringing you fresh sounds from local and touring hits. Live music until 11 p.m., DJ sets 11 p.m. to close. This month features 2 North, Durazo, Lisa Vasquez, and more, and is a benefit for KABU. Again, that's Thirsty City, Wednesday, October 26th, 8:30 p.m. at The Know, 2026 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.